Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Suggestible. I'm introing the show, apparently. You just pointed at me. Just throw that on me like it's nothing. Like, luckily I'm a professional. I just roll with it. You wouldn't even notice the difference, most
people.
But
now you're talking about it. No, not
it's still
professional.
No, it's still because people, I'm exuding a confidence that people aren't bothered
okay.
by it.
Yeah, you're so confident that your jumper says champion.
That's right.
I mean, really? Okay, champ, I'm Claire.
I'm trying to think if I've ever won anything.
You're Jack.
On merit. I don't think I have.
No. No. You won that radio competition. And explain to the listeners what you want. By the way, we're married. This is James. I'm Claire. In case you didn't know, this is Suggestible, where we recommend you stuff. Go on.
It's funny you said that because I've got a video that's going up like the day this is, I think, where I talk about it. But basically, I won a Nintendo 64 in 1999 for the release of Star Wars Episode 1 for doing for doing a C-3PO impersonation. I'm proud of it. I don't care. I'll tell everybody.
What? Can you do your impression?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, go.
Luke, help, I'm trapped. My legs have been shot off by a stormtrooper. Just kill me here. I can't do this anymore.
That's so accurate.
Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea you had such acting chops.
Oh, yeah, so that's why I won, obviously. No, I didn't. It was a worse impersonation than that, if you could believe it, but the other two were way worse. So I got to win it. But the other thing, I've talked about this before, but the idea was that the people who won, because I was doing like one every night, would come in and record like a skit. For this is with Triple M on the Crud Show, would do a skit for like the new Star Wars film, and I'm like, I hope that never happens. I just want the Nintendo. I don't want to do anything else. And luckily, it never eventuated because I'm sure they went, actually, this is insane, and this won't go well. So I got the Nintendo, and that was it.
Wow, there you go. Let's get the ball rolling.
Let's do it.
Okay, champ. That's going to be my new name for you.
Well, I'm happy with that.
I'm saying it ironically.
It's reflective. No, I'll take it. I'll take it real. Yeah.
All right. Is it my turn first? Or
you can go first. That's fine.
Woo. So it's ladies first this time. Mm. I went and saw a film last night I've been really looking forward to seeing called Judy.
Moving pictures.
About Judy Garland. I've been talking about it for a while. I finally got to see it. It's the life of Judy Garland. Well, it really documents the last 5 weeks of her life.
Right.
When she did a show in London.
Is she in ill health in the last 5 weeks? Is that?
Well, she's just addicted to pills and booze and a whole lot of things, which kind of unfolds throughout the film. It stars Renee Zellweger, who, by the way, does a brilliant job and disappears into the character. She is spectacular in this.
I love Bridget Jones, but I've got a baby now, whatever that movie.
Sorry. We are struggling today.
I'm dying.
Oh, God.
Of great fun.
What I loved about Bridget Jones is that ridiculous fight scene between Colin Firth and Hugh Grant when they're all scuffly around.
Oh,
do you remember
yeah.
that in the first movie? And they punch on, but they punch on like regular 45-year-old men would.
Yes.
And I love it. It's so good. Because no one ever punches like they would in the Avengers.
Oh, no, it's very scrappy and not
correct.
Fun.
Cool, exactly. Yeah. So this movie is heartbreaking, but Renee Zellweger's voice in this is amazing. The way she captures her Judy Garland's essence is just incredible. Mm. I watched an interview with her where she said she just had so much fun deep diving into her life and Judy's musical ability, and just all of the old footage was just amazing.
Oh, wow, okay.
There's a lot that I didn't realize about her. Obviously, she's most famous for her role in The Wizard of Oz, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And the film kind of transitions between memories of her when she was working for MGM, the film company, which I didn't know a lot about. And I looked up, it's the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, which is the lion that goes.
It's the lion that goes, and it nearly went under, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
it did.
By now, or someone else definitely bought it at some point.
Yeah. So the Wizard of Oz was produced in 1939. Now, the character that looms large.
She was actually 17 when she did that then.
Yeah, and it just looked like the most horrible life. Her real name was actually Frances Ethel Gumm.
Yes, two
Her
M's.
Life when she's a teenager depicted and while she is working for the studio is just horrendous. There's I guess a film producer, you'd call him Lewis Burt Meyer.
You guess you'd call him that?
Who's played by Richard Cordery. Mm. And he just sort of looms as this almost Harvey Weinstein-esque kind of character in her life.
Right.
It's sort of semi-implied that there was some sexual misconduct, but not really. Like, nothing actually happens, but he threatens her a lot. He's very manipulative. They get her to go on diet pills, so she becomes addicted to diet pills because they want her to be tiny for the role of Dorothy.
Aren't they speed as well, those diet
pills? Yeah, they are. Yeah, so they basically put a 15-year-old girl on speed.
Yeah.
And they restricted everything she ate.
Do they recast it for when she's young, obviously? There's like a different actor?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Who do they have to play her?
I don't know. I didn't write her down. Okay. She's good.
Yeah, but that's not the main.
Yeah, it's not. They're only kind of flashbacks, but it really gives you an understanding about the Judy that appears in her 40s.
Yes.
And what she's been through and the kind of pressure she was under from the studio. And I guess what they could get away with back then. Makes me think so much about child actors and what they go through. And
oh, it was atrocious, yeah.
Yeah, so I think she was really – she was really messed up, but they sort of hint that her mother was quite a difficult character and her father was gay. So,
oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, and I think left them when she was quite young. So she kind of gets taken by the studios and her mother just allows whatever.
They lock her into some contract as well.
Yeah, they did some horrible contract. So even though she was brilliant and performed in such a spectacular way, it really depicts Judy as someone who has like a love-hate relationship with the stage.
Yes.
And it's really a love affair with her audience, but behind the scenes what it takes out of a performer, particularly someone as fragile as her, to get up there and do what she does. Like there's a moment where she arrives in London, she's had to leave her children back in America because she's completely broke and her career in America is over really because everyone's seen her as really difficult to work with because of her addictions and her inability to be consistent. But when she's on, she is incredible, lightning in a bottle, just amazing. And when she arrives in London, she's just so fragile. But also there's this great scene where she goes to do a rehearsal. Everyone's really worried because she gets there. She's like, oh, I don't feel like rehearsing. It's a bit damp in here. And everyone goes, opening night is tomorrow night. There's like four tiers of – it's a, you know, a huge audience at Talk of the Town in London. It's sold out opening night and the critics are all coming and she doesn't even look fazed at all and just broken and everyone's terrified. And she rocks up and kills it with zero rehearsal with that band.
Yeah,
but
right.
She's just – she obviously has been doing it since she was five. And it's just so ingrained in her. There's something amazing in the way that Renee Zellweger captured that essence of her.
Yeah, absolutely.
And such a show woman, really, like spectacular, but heartbreaking because behind the scenes she's had, you know, four or five marriages and chooses the wrong guys and loves her kids so fiercely but can't get a handle on herself and her ability to look after herself. And, yeah, it's really sad.
Oh.
But also incredible,
but
and the soundtrack is amazing. Yeah, definitely see it. The soundtrack, the songs are so iconic. Songs that I hadn't heard before by myself, and Get Happy is obviously, come on, get happy. You know, that song is amazing. For Once in My Life is really famous, but by myself I hadn't heard, and it's the opening number of her when she smashes it, and it's brilliant. Come Rain or Come Shine, the trolley song, Zing Went the Strings. It's just such a great album to go and look at on Spotify as well. So I've deep dived into Judy and old archive footage and it is brilliant.
Okay,
she's got this real, because her daughter is Liza Minnelli,
yes,
who I also really love, and she's from Cabaret, to, you know.
And Arrested Development and other things.
And other things, so many other things. But I love her particularly in Cabaret. But there's something similar about them. You can see their mother and daughter. There's a movement and a way of being on stage that is kind of unusual, but so you just can't look away. It just grabs you. And it's the same kind of quality that Barbara Streisand has. She's not necessarily the most beautiful person, you know, aesthetically, whatever, but she's just, the charisma is just dripping off the stage. And it's, it just reminded me again of how star quality isn't about being perfect. It's sort of about embodying, you know, all their uniqueness or something.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. Does that sound really corny?
No, I get what you're
saying. Poor colleagues, he has to edit me today. I am struggling at Struggletown.
Liza Minnelli, I'd forgotten this. She was married to Peter Allen at one point as well.
Oh, Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's another thing they explore actually in the
Peter
film.
Peter Allen also famously very, very, very gay.
Well, this is where going with this.
Yeah.
They explore Judy Garland a little bit as a gay icon in the film.
Okay, cool.
And there's some beautiful scenes with a gay couple who've obviously, you know, loved her for a long time. And back at that time, one of them was arrested for being with their partner.
Right, okay.
And so they couldn't go and see her when she first came to London. So the second time round, they go every night and sit in the audience, and then she ends up catching up with them afterwards and goes to their flat, and it's just this beautiful scene, and you just get you start to get an understanding of, or a tiny window into what it must be like to have the person that you love not be approved of.
Yes.
And not even just not approved of, but arrested for just being with the person that you love.
Yeah.
And then how important Judy was to them and in their life. It was, and what she meant to people. It's a reminder that being different should be celebrated.
Yes.
Enough.
Unless you're a prick.
Yeah. Like you, champ.
Like me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I saw a movie called The Nightingale, which is directed by Jennifer Kent, who's an Australian director. She also did The Babadook a few years back, which is like a horror movie.
The Babadook, Babadook, but I just like saying
it. Not like that. Yeah, I've never actually seen it. I'm one of those ones that I've been meaning to watch it. But The Nightingale, basically, it's set in 1825, and it's about a convict Irish woman named Claire, A-R-E though.
Good name still.
And she's done her kind of time as a convict because she was brought over for reasons that you find out for. And she's abused by this English soldier and who's kind of keeping her on the hook because she's technically allowed to leave and go and live her life with her husband and her baby, but he's abusing her and kind of like offering her it, then taking it back and things like that. And anyway, there's this – then at the very beginning of the movie, without spoiling it too much, this officer commits like an atrocious act towards like her and her family – which I won't detail here.
But you were going to say to a horse.
There is some atrocious horse action in this movie.
Oh,
there
Lord.
Isn't, I think the horses are okay.
You don't like horses, but not a lot of, no one wishes
it's interesting,
that
on no, because, well, Jennifer Kent, who made this movie, I watched a few interviews with her afterwards, and she's talking about how the violence that's portrayed in this film, it's not just for the sake of... It's to drive home like a point. It's like it has purpose. It's not just, you know, you shoot someone and they fall down or whatever, you know, like... what like many movies are. I put my like hand to my mouth, like there was that kind of like whoa, like it was very, very confronting. And anyway, from there she goes, you shouldn't watch it, you'll hate it, but she then goes to find this English officer for revenge, and she takes with her an Indigenous tracker. And the interesting thing is, it's because it's set in 1825 in Van Diemen's Land, which then became Tasmania. This was the time of the Black War, which was basically they were just killing the indigenous people there.
Massacre.
Yeah, it was an absolute massacre. It's resulted in like a huge loss in culture. It was commonly thought that there weren't any left in the modern day, but there are survivors. There are ancestors who still exist. But it's a revenge story, but it's also about forgiveness and acceptance and things like that. So it's not just her going out and trying to murder this guy. Although it starts that way, it becomes this different thing. And her and the tracker, they don't really get along and they're from completely different worlds. But they've also both experienced trauma at the hands of English settlement. So it's like they kind of bond over this kind of situation. And it's been criticised for like depictions of rape and murder. There was a screening in Sydney where 30 people walked out. But she's defended this decision. So I've just written this down here to get this right. Saying the film, it contains historically accurate depictions of the violence and racism at the time that the colonial power inflicted on Indigenous people, and it was produced in collaboration with the Tasmanian Aboriginal elders who asserted that this is an honest and necessary depiction of history and a story that needs to be told. So it's one of those things where it's not fun to watch. It's brutal, but it's also, it's not far removed from what actually happened at the time, because Australia was built off the back of an Indigenous slaughter, you know, and now it's all like barbecues and mates and prawns and whatever, but it, there is this dark history here that
We don't really address very often, I don't feel. I don't think so.
And there's and the depiction of it is people are becoming more aware of it now. But it's like that whole thing about in Australia, there's a debate about this is a cheery episode.
This is such a depressing episode. I'm trying to think maybe I'll change my recommendation.
My last one is a bit happier. But yeah, to change the date of Australia Day because it signifies the arrival of Captain Cook. Is that right? Or the First Fleet or one of them? I can't remember.
Yeah, the First Fleet.
I used to know. I don't care. But to another date because, you know, for some people in Australia, that's a celebration because it's a new land. But for others, like the Indigenous, that's not. That's an invasion, a loss of land, a trauma, and a loss of culture and family. And it's anyway, I think they should move it. That's a whole other debate entirely.
I do too, because it's unifying at the end of the day.
You know, if you still want to have your fucking barbecue on that day, you can, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. But I think Australia is supposed to be set up as, like, inclusive for all, and shouldn't it be also inclusive for the people who were here originally, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know. It's such a complex issue. Obviously, we don't want to speak for anyone who is of Indigenous descent, but from my perspective, it just makes sense to move the day so that everyone can be involved and celebrate the nation going forward, because we can't go back in time and erase history and change things, but we can move forward together.
Yeah, that's right. And there is the argument that, like, well, if they move it once, what are we going to just then move it again if, like, another thing happens?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're supposed – because if there's something that comes up that maybe, you know, that you could, you know, change it for the betterment of everybody, then, yeah, maybe you do move it again, or maybe you keep it in a new date. Yeah. This new date forever. I don't know. I think it's important, though, to have these conversations and not just be locked into this thing forever, you know?
Yeah, I do. And I think what's really interesting too, we've noticed this too with, not that it's the same, but the Melbourne Cup is another public holiday that the nation, well, particularly Victoria in Australia, celebrates, and it's a famous racing horse, a racing race.
It's a horse race. We talked about it recently.
I am in the ward of struggle town today. Oh, my God. God, I'm so sorry. Anyway, in previous years, it's been, you know, really sort of infamous and famous, and everyone's dressed up and put hats on and all this stuff. But it's been decreasing in popularity and attendance because people are starting to really examine horse racing and the way that horses are treated, the loss of lives of jockeys. And this is complex too, because there's a whole industry there and families and history.
Well, that's the other thing,
rural communities that's their, you know, day of the year when they all come together.
It's entertainment and livelihood. And it's not as simple as just cutting things off.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think we're moving into an age where we're really starting to examine things more. And I think the other part of it too is that Australia is such a young country.
Yes.
You know, it's old in terms of Indigenous history, you know, 70,000 years. But in terms of, colonisation, it's a couple of hundred years.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see where our country heads towards, you know, in another 200 years, what we want to country to look like.
Yeah, it's not looking great at the moment. But look, we'll see. Well, maybe we'll turn it around. What's next?
Oh, God, this is such a depressing episode.
Oh, my God, Claire.
Another fun thing after this because, oh, boy. But it's probably indicative of my mood. We've been having some really terrible bushfires in a state called New South Wales, where Sydney is the capital city. And Queensland and South Australia. So our heart goes out to anyone.
It's probably nothing, though. It's probably not climate change related, as everybody says it is.
Anyway,
I've just been reflecting
a lot on the impacts of climate change, and we're actually physically seeing them now. And our government and Scott Morrison, who is our current Prime Minister, is just not doing anything about it. And I know a lot of people can feel a lot of inertia, and I can too, around this issue. And obviously also a lot of people aren't sure about the science around climate change. There's a lot of misinformation. So I found a video that Greta Thunberg, which is how you pronounce her name, and it's always a bit tricky, created. So she's a schoolgirl and activist who's just been going around the world just being incredibly amazing and powerful and strong on climate change particularly. And she's created a video with environmental and political activist George Monbiot.
Ah, George Monbiot,
I think that's how you say his name, Monbiot. Anyway, and it's great. I shared it on my Instagram, but I'll also share it on Suggestible and put a link in the bio to it. It really just talks about, in very plain terms, what's going on with the environment and what are some of the solutions that we can actually do right now that communities can do on a small micro level and what we need to do on a macro level.
Yes.
To try and combat the effects of climate change, and, you know, taking carbon out of the atmosphere is one of the biggest ones. And what made me really happy was that our Planet Broadcasting fundraiser this year has been for the Seaweed Regeneration Project. And James is even yawning.
So sick of the environment. Get over it, environment. Anyway,
Greta talks a lot of in this video, particularly about how some of the best solutions are natural ones. And so planting more trees, growing, you know, more forests and also kelp forests as well in the ocean that can sequester carbon, which is what we're currently doing. So that charity campaign, Collings will link below. It's still open if you'd like to donate. If you feel powerless like me, that's something you can absolutely do right now to try and help and plant some more seaweed that can sequester carbon. So
there's the current bushfires in Australia.
Wow.
A lot of red there, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of red. Yeah. So that's one thing. And I guess the other thing she's encouraging everybody to do is to get out on the streets.
Yeah.
Get active. Get out there.
Flip cars. Break windows. Destroy local businesses.
Settle down, champ. But yeah, correct. Exactly.
No, don't do any of that. Yeah.
No, but just get political. Write letters to your local, you know, parliamentarians.
Flip a car.
Attend the rallies.
Punch a police horse.
And plant some trees. Just go out and plant some trees.
Plant some trees.
Anyway, enough from me.
Native trees.
Native trees, correct, exactly, all the things. What's your recommendation? A bit happier.
This is something I started a few years ago and it's back on Netflix, or it's soon to be back on Netflix. Who's to say? It's called The Toys That Made Us. It's a Netflix series, as said, and basically it covers, it's about maybe it's an hour or so each, maybe it's half an hour.
It's about a grown man who likes to play with toys.
Pretty much,
his name is James Clement.
How dare you? I'm a champ. So it covers the history of popular toy brands from inception to either death or like continuous growth. So it looks at the history of Lego, which, did you know initially, Claire, Lego didn't even have the little clicky bits in it. They just used to like stack loosely on top of each other. Insanity.
That's so crazy.
And I think their Lego factory even burnt down a couple of times. They're talking about, they do Transformers. They do Star Wars. Star Wars is particularly interesting because.
Is it?
Well, yes, because George Lucas gave up some of the rights of the money to the director's fee so that he would retain all the franchise rights and all the toy rights.
Genius.
Because people were like, toys, they don't sell for shit. It's not going to matter. But they were an absolute phenomenon, these Star Wars toys. So that's a particularly interesting one.
He made a lot of money.
He did make a lot of, like, billions and billions of dollars.
Billions and millions and millions and billions.
There's also Barbie, Hello Kitty. He-Man one is particularly interesting because it.
Is it?
Yes, because they just ruin it. Like it's huge and then it just disappears forever. Aww. So that's, and they think some people blame Shearer because they bought out like He-Man for girls. And they're like, well, this was just for boys. And now it was about muscular men and now there's girls and now it's ruined. Maybe it is, but I think it's also the arrival of like there was Ninja Turtles and there was also Transformers and a bunch of other stuff going on at the same time. Anyway, I just think it's a really interesting and fun show. If you've got any interest in like a toy from your childhood from like the 80s or 90s, there's probably an episode that might interest you. I haven't watched them all. Like I looked at the Barbie one and I went, Barbie's for girls. No, thank you.
Excuse me, what? Actually, Barbie has got really cool now.
That's true.
She was very problematic there for a while.
And now she vapes, so it's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Vaping Barbie.
Woohoo. But she's a doctor and a nurse.
Zoologist. She does it all. She's a doctor. She's a nurse. Barbie's,
and she's like different sizes now. She's not as skinny and tiny.
Mm.
I respect her a bit more now. I think they finally realized that women are the ones buying the Barbies.
Well, I think it's also that like toys are kind of the industry isn't what it used to be.
Needs to be more inclusive.
Well, not even that, because toys aren't selling like they used to, because everything's kind of digital now on apps and video games.
That's kind of sad.
Who gives a shit?
Okay, you tell me, what was your favorite toy from the 80s or 90s?
In the 80s, it was Voltron and it was Ninja Turtles and it was Transformers and Star Wars.
You had an outfit, a Ninja Turtle outfit.
I did have a Ninja Turtles outfit.
Which is your favorite Ninja Turtle?
Well, initially it was Leonardo because he had swords, and then I went to Michelangelo because he's more of a party dude. And then I thought, I'm not really a party dude. I'm kind of.
You are definitely not a party dude.
I know, that's what
I'm
saying.
You are very much
alone.
I'm cool
but rude, like Raphael, because he's kind of rude and cool. But then I'm like, you know what? I'm probably a big fucking nerd, so I'm probably Donatello. So I've run the gamut, but I'm probably Donatello.
Your essence, you feel, is actually Donatello.
Probably, yeah.
See, I'm an April girl from way back.
Yeah, you're not Venus de Milo, the female Ninja Turtle?
I don't even know who that is.
Don't even
April
worry
had
about it.
A kick-ass yellow jumpsuit that I respected. I respected it a lot.
The original Ninja Turtle comics are really... there's still good comics, but the original comics are really good.
I just liked the pizza as well. I always thought the pizza they made looked delicious.
Yeah, but
got delivered.
That's true. They didn't make their own pizza. Maybe April would bring it down to the sewer for them.
Maybe she will. All right. I want to talk about something. Okay. You didn't ask me what my toy was.
Oh, what's your
you said
April.
It's all about you.
Well, I didn't think, was that what we were doing?
My favorite toy. You didn't even ask.
I don't even care. So why would I ask?
Polly Pocket was the
Polly Pocket was your favorite toy?
Yeah, I love Polly Pocket. Oh, and My Little Pony.
You've never talked about Polly Pocket.
Yeah, I know. Well, you never asked me.
You know, there's a whole lot of
Actually, you still have never
asked me. Why would I never ask you? Why would I ask you about Polly Pocket?
Because I asked you. That's the way that this conversation should go.
But I constantly talk about this shit. So why would you even ask me? Did you know Mighty Max, the equivalent of Polly Pocket, the male version?
No.
It's like, it's a snake head and there's a man inside. He's got a laser or whatever. But Polly Pocket was like, I don't know, Easy Bake Ovens.
It was
and
whatever, so cute, a little fantasy land.
So you weren't Barbies?
No, God, no. Barbie's boring. Barbie doesn't really do anything. Nah.
You just said she's a speedboat captain.
But now she is. But back then she couldn't even
She was
walk
all those.
Properly.
No, she was those things back then, but
yeah,
it's
but
more
she was
so
like
now,
all
yeah.
skinny and big boobs and I don't know. She made me feel bad about myself. I preferred the purple, shiny, sparkly ponies.
Well, that's a huge – My Little Pony's still crushing it.
Yeah, I know.
Huge culture.
Particularly with
yeah.
like the male audience.
I think it's everybody. I think it's like all audiences.
Well, I've got a cousin
yeah.
who's really into it.
I know, yeah.
Well, there you go. Okay, just quickly, on a side note, I want to talk about something. You know when you're feeling a bit blah,
yeah.
like when you realize that the world is burning, you don't know what to do about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know that feeling that I wake up every day.
I've been trying to come up with things to cheer myself up.
Yeah.
One of them is avoiding you at all costs.
Sounds good to me.
Another one is making fun of you, which is one of my favorite
things to do. I don't
like
that one as much, yeah.
All right, settle down, champ. But my other thing to do is to rewatch favorite TV shows. And I know this is such an obvious thing. But I have watched the entirety of Sex and the City. It's very problematic. I totally understand.
There's some good stuff in Sex and the City.
All the sparkly outfits and all the things. It just made me feel better. Friends does
I'm
that.
I'm glad she didn't end up with Aiden because, quite frankly, she didn't deserve him.
Yeah, she didn't. She didn't. They're all assholes. They
terrible.
Really are. They're all terrible humans. Yeah. However,
but that,
very does,
but that doesn't mean that they're not compelling characters. Like, you can be terrible and compelling.
Yes, and flawed. I think it's great to see flawed women on TV like that because they're, I mean, particularly back then, there just weren't characters like that. So, anyway, that's one thing. What do you do when you're feeling down in the old
God, probably have a nap.
Dumps?
Oh, my favorite thing to do is have a nap. I'm gonna have a nap after this. I got a whole lot of editing to do, but I think I'm just going to have a nap.
You do that when you're happy as well.
I do it whenever I can, man. Sleep when you can. That's my motto. Sleep and eat when you can.
Sleep when you're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I was talking to Mason the other day and I'm just like, I think I've just always been tired. Like I've never not, even when I was a kid, I was wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I think
it's
I'm just,
another day.
Yeah. Those blue light glasses have helped like dramatically, but I think I've got to, like, I don't know. I don't know. What
yeah, you
do.
Are, but you've had blood tests. You're not iron deficient.
No.
I don't know what's going on. But yeah, when we first started dating, I always thought it was weird how much you slept. Dear Lord. And you like a bath as well.
I'll do a bath.
Gross. Like sitting in your own filth. Bloody
the
hell.
The trick is to have a bath and then have a shower afterwards.
That is so much of a waste of water.
What
okay,
am I, fucking
well,
Greta Thunberg? It's not my responsibility.
Thunberg.
Sorry.
The other thing that I like to do is go for a walk in the nature.
Wow, that's you know, so you're so unique. Well, I can't believe you've got so many interesting hobbies, Claire.
I'm just
watching Sex
people.
In the City and going for a walk. Do you ever have a cosmopolitan with the girls? What else do you do? Jesus.
They're out, mate.
So basic,
like
Claire.
You. Oh, that's mean. Well, you are basic bitch over there.
Thank you. Anyway, God. If you want to review
basically
the
bitch about everything.
That's true.
I'm if feeling do, better already.
If you do want to review the show, I don't know why you would, but people do. It's very nice. This is by Italian Jew, as in J-U. It's 5 stars. It says, great pod. Love the chemistry. Didn't think James would have chemistry with anyone but Mason. My suggestion is opposite day. James suggests, this is for the show. Also, why wouldn't I have chemistry with my wife? I think that's important that you'd have chemistry with the person that you're decided to spend some of your life with at the very least. My suggestion is opposite day. James suggests a recipe, a memoir, a music thing, and Claire suggests a comic book or an apocalyptic thing. Imagine the pants. Keep up the amazing work.
What does he mean, imagine the pants?
Different pants, Claire.
Ah, different pants.
You know, you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't get it.
That's from my other show, my more popular show.
Oh, I know. I don't listen enough. But you talk about
we don't want you, quite
so
frankly. We've got enough listeners. We don't need you, all right? We don't want you.
I should listen
anyway,
more.
If you want to review the show, you can do it in-app.
In the app, you can. Also, if you would like to recommend us stuff that is better than the stuff that we've recommended, which always happens because our listeners are smart and excellent and often smarter than us, you can do so by
You're
going
so pandering,
to
Claire. They're not all smarter
oh,
than us.
God. Well, they're smarter than you anyway. All right, let me.
I think you need a chalkboard behind you. You could call it James's burn board, and you could just cross it off as you go.
You're making me feel better, and I like it. That's why I married you. I don't like you that much, but I like to make fun of you. Yeah. God damn, it feels good. So you can recommend us stuff at Suggestible Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We would love to hear from you.
Oh my goodness.
This is from Jack Diaz Doherty. Hi, Claire. Hi, James.
Hey.
I got an exclamation mark and you just got a comma. So there you go. Thanks, Jack. Not sure if this is where I should send a recommendation, but I figured why not? I was lucky enough to see Knives Out at the Denver Film Festival on Halloween night. Since it's not out till the end of November, I must tell you that it is a must-see. Yes. Capitals. This would be a great movie to see together as it's a ton of fun, great mystery, and the performances are just amazing. Love the show and hope you guys get a chance to see Knives Out as soon as you can. Ryan Johnson. Oh.
You directed The Last Jedi.
Ah, Ryan Johnson is on fire with this one.
Mm.
There you go, Jim Bob.
I really like Ryan Johnson.
How you like them apples?
So I'm really looking forward. And it's got a great cast.
I like Rian Johnson too.
You like Rian Johnson, do you? That person doesn't exist, Claire.
He does in my heart.
All right, look, next week, I don't know what we're doing, are we?
Why are you so sad for?
Because I'm tired, Claire.
The world's only ending.
I'm just scrolling through Twitter. I'm looking at these hashtags and it's like bushfires, Alan Jones, who's like the worst guy in the world.
Yeah.
It's just George Powell and it's just a bunch of shit that I'm like, I hate all of this so much. Anyway, next week, it'll be all happy all the time.
It'll be, yeah. Come on, get happy. Gotta take your fears away. Actually, Collins, can you replace that with the actual soundtrack from Judy, not me singing
it? The whole song?
Come on, get happy. Yeah, it's so fun. I love it.
All right, see you next week.
Bye.
What an absolute fucking downer of an episode. No one's coming back after this one.
I know.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.